Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Monday on the Savage Nation. This is Michael Savage filling in for Michael Savage. I say filling in for myself because on a day like today, I feel like I'm filling in for myself in the sense that it's Monday, it's hot, another heat wave on the West Coast. It happens every year, nothing to do with global warming. As far as history has recorded it, we get heat waves this time of year. They call it Indian summer. But, you know, I'd rather be whatever. You know how those bumper stickers, I'd rather be. Remember they were big in the 70s, I'd rather be. I don't know what I'd rather be doing, so I'd rather be in front of the microphone, truthfully, because there's nothing else out there other than radio. Welcome to the program. Now, there's a lot of news. The biggest news, of course, is whatever you want to make of the biggest news. And the biggest news is that Obama's a PR man for himself and some special interests. And his friends in the government media complex are his willing accomplices. Never in American history have we seen a president appear so many places at once as does this would-be professor. But I want to talk about something that is of interest to anyone who has a child, a small child in particular, whether you're a mother or father, single mother, or an integrated nuclear family, or even a grandparent. Are bath time photos of young children child pornography? Why do I ask that question? Because there are demented perverts in America who work for Child Protective Services whose entire goal is to take children away from normal families and give them to perverts. And so what they do is they sit like vultures waiting for photos to show up at stores that show bath time photos from, you know, normal families of a child holding another child with a bath towel. And then they call up psychotic police inside the Child Protective Sex Exploitation Division of the police departments, also filled, no doubt, with perverts. Who love looking at this stuff, and then they arrest the parents and take the children away. Now, am I making this up? This just came out. Last fall, Lisa and A.J. DeMary took a memory stick with family photos to a print center at a Walmart in Arizona. And some of the pictures on the memory stick showed their three young girls, all under age five, partially nude in a bathtub, something that every American family has taken pictures of, cute little children, their own. The DeMarys say that these were innocent pictures that all families take. But a Walmart sicko in the photo department, some sick pervert, called the police who agreed that this was a child pornography situation. So obviously the cop is a sicko too. The police report read, quote, "The young girl appeared to be posed in a provocative manner." A report was then issued by Peoria authorities that described the photos as, quote, "child erotica and sex exploitation." The vermin in Child Protective Services, 99% of whom are, as you well know, anti-family, the vermin in Child Protective Services searched the home of these parents, took custody of the children for a month, while the bureaucrat Nazis in the state investigated. They watched family videotapes and found a few in which the children were playing unclothed. Lisa was suspended from her school job for a year, and both parents' names were placed on the sex offender registry. The couple then had to spend $75,000 on legal bills. Eventually, they were cleared of any charges. Daughters returned. But they're now suing the vermin at Walmart and the state for what they call unfair accusations. Today, the DeMarys were on Good Morning America, and they said, "I don't understand it at all. 99% of the families in America have these exact same photos." You hear? And then the mother says, I even worry about them in their bathing suits. If I get a shot of them in their bathing suits and they're tilting their heads a certain way or their hips are sticking out a little bit, all I think of is, does someone think that it was posed? Or how is that going to be perceived? Honestly, we've missed a year of our children's lives as far as our memories go, Lisa. And as crazy as it may seem, what you may think are the most beautiful, innocent pictures of your children may be seen as something completely different and completely perverted. The answer is yes, by perverts. And most of the perverts take jobs inside Child Protective Services and inside the Child Protective Divisions of police departments. Now, don't get me wrong. I believe that the police have a duty to arrest real child molesters and real child, perverts of this nature. But to do this to children, this is unbelievable. And for Walmart to permit an employee to do this without putting out any memos saying, stop it. I mean, this is the tyranny of the left wing. This is the tyranny of the liberal establishment. This is the anti-family nature of liberalism, the mental disorder. I hope the family recovers from this injustice. I hope the family wins hundreds of millions of dollars from Walmart and from the state of Arizona. I hope that the Peoria Police Department and the rest of the city and the state of Arizona and the CPS department wind up in jail themselves, because there's enough is enough. This is a gross miscarriage of justice. It's anti-family. It's an insane world. And it's upside down. Now, that's one of the stories that caught my attention today on the Savage Nation. If you care to comment, what are you going to say? They shouldn't have taken a picture of their child? You know, I don't know a family that never took a picture of their child in a bathtub. Do you know anyone who didn't? A real child, a real family? You can't kiss your own child for fear that some Nazi from the States watching you, that you kissed your child on the cheek? And some state pervert with short hair and mean face is going to come in and arrest you with a long lens through a window? Well, what's going on in your world that you let this happen? How did it become so upside down that a man who lauded Chavez, not Cesar Chavez, but Hugo Chavez, a man who lauded Hugo Chavez, the dictator from South America, is now the FCC diversity czar. His name is Mark Lloyd. How did we wind up with a man who says that we need to get white male conservatives thrown off the air and replace them with people of color and gays on the radio? How did we wind up living in an upside-down universe? How? How did it happen? Because you let it happen. You let it happen. You let a lot of things happen. I can't blame you, because most of us would rather just go along and get along. We have a living to make. We have children to raise, or we just want to be left alone. I understand that. And I want to go back to an adage that is still true today, in fact, under Obama, more true than ever. It goes like this. All it takes for evil to flourish is for good men to do nothing. And so you are the good men and women of America. And in doing nothing, you have permitted evil to flourish. And I will use the word again and again and again until you get it. The FCC diversity chief, in my opinion, is evil. The new czar that he appointed to run all of the contracts in the country, the Sunstein, evil. They're un-American. They're anti-American. They're anti-freedom. They want to put you in chains, if not literal, then figurative chains. Wherever you turn, evil is flourishing because good men are doing nothing. Now, there is a trend in the opposite. The Tea Parties, the town hall meetings, are the real Americans, the good Americans, standing up to the evil America. That's how I see it. Now, you say I'm polarizing the country? Far from it. I'm pointing out a country that was polarized by the radical communist left. And now the real America is starting to show its face. They've seen nothing yet. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Here we are in Indian summer already, and in the upcoming phases of the moon. In tonight's sky at sunset, the waxing crescent moon is just below the star Alpha Librae, the brightest star in the constellation Libra, the Scalels. The star is also known by its Arabic name. Venus rises at 4:41 a.m., Mars rises at 12:59 a.m., Jupiter sets at 3:41 a.m., and Saturn rises at 6:40 a.m. This is, of course, to make certain that the FCC diversity czar under Obama doesn't say I'm discriminating against the dark side of the moon or the light side of the moon. I want to be fair to both sides of the moon. I don't want to be undiverse. And so I have to read the the phases of the moon in order to satisfy the new diversity czar, Sieg Heil. And then talking again about the lead story in the Savage Nation, kid pics, pictures of your own kids sent to Walmart or wherever, and a pervert inside the photo department, which is where they seem to go anyway. They love that kind of thing. They, you know, the minimum wage workers like to get into photo departments. They can see things that others can't see. And perhaps they can catch someone taking a picture of their child in a bathtub, an innocent picture, and maybe destroy a family. Then they go home with the nose ring and the purple hair and drive around with Obama bumper stickers thinking that they've done good for the world by destroying another nuclear family. That's why I warn you, be careful. You're living in a new kind of America, an America your father could never have imagined. Anna, New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
I'm just thinking about professional photography studios that display these, what I think are lovely pictures of a little naked newborn in the palm of his father's hand, or a little naked baby.
That's right. The NYPD should break down the door. They should get the tax squad and arrest the photographer. They got nothing else to do. Crime is down. They put everybody else in jail who dared do anything, so now they can go after the photographers. You're right. They need to justify their existence.
Right.
Yeah, that's where we're going. You see, since crime is down, they now have to arrest the middle class. That'll be the right thing to do in Obama. I'll give you an example. Last night, I'm driving home from a restaurant. I have a relatively new Mercedes. Cop pulls us over out of nowhere. Big, brave Marin County Sheriff's Department cop with the lights, the flashing. You can't get out of the car for fear. He'll shoot you with his 40 caliber machine gun or whatever. What's the problem? Your right taillight is out. Well, no, it isn't, officer. When you put the fog lights on in a Mercedes, it turns off. It only turns on one top left light. If you look carefully, there are two taillights that are on. This is only an additional light that goes on. Anyway, doesn't take no for an answer. This is an example of what he has to do. Now, would he have pulled over a car with four tattooed members from the gangland area? I kind of doubt it. It looks like he just came out of the academy and he had a real live one. Middle-aged white couple. Oh, boy. Fearless Fosdick with his 40 caliber handgun. Steve in San Francisco, KSTE. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, I was just telling your screener there, I got banned from a local restaurant this weekend for what they call a hate speech, for defending you and freedom and liberty. They told me to take my politics and leave. And then they
Great. What kind of restaurant was it?
You want to know the name?
No, just what kind of food?
Oh, Italian.
An Italian doesn't like conservative talk?
They both graduated from your alma mater, Cal Berkeley, the wife and the husband.
Oh, that's not Italian food. That's pseudo-Italian food. It's ersatz fraudulent Italian food. I can guarantee you that your grandmother cooked Italian food. These people are cooking what you call California Italian food, which is fake from top to bottom.
Yeah, it's pretty pathetic, but I just...
What is it, $19 for a plate of spaghetti?
It's all watered down. You have as much pasta as you want with your main meal. It's like...
I bet you they don't serve meatballs because that's too low class.
Absolutely not.
How much is a glass of wine? $9 to $16 a glass.
Drink a beer, bottled beer is $3.75 a bottle for just a bottle of Coors.
Well, were you insulting someone when you were talking or what?
Yeah, there was the high school I went to was I graduated in 1980. I'm 47 years old, and the class of 81 came in, a bunch of people, like 30 of them, and I hadn't seen them in a long time, and.
You were expressing your political opinion? Did anyone complain?
Well, that's what he said. He came up to me a couple days later. He tapped me on the shoulder on Friday night, and he called me outside, and he said a guy named Russ, who I don't even know, complained that you used the N-word on the President of the United States inside the bar on Friday night.
Well, and did you?
I said, absolutely not.
You had a fellow graduate accuse you of using the N-word, and this idiot in the restaurant said you can't come in my restaurant because of a false accusation?
He was on the side. He kept telling me I'm lying. Every time I said I would not say that about the president.
I'll tell you what we're going to do for you, Steve. You're going to send me is this in San Francisco?
I'm actually in Pleasant Hill. It's east of San Francisco, about 25 near Walnut.
Oh, yeah. Okay, send me the name of the restaurant and the incident by email, and I'm going to hire you an attorney for free, and we're going to sue the owners unless they apologize to you. How's that?
It sounds awesome, Mike.
Okay, I'll tell you, I'm doing that right now. You're sending me your name, the name of the restaurant, exactly what happened. And if it's what you say happened, I'm going to sue that restaurant. I'm going to have you sue the restaurant. I'm hiring you a lawyer. And we're going to make those two you-know-whats apologize to you on the air. How's that, Steve?
That's beautiful, Michael. That's
What's the name of this restaurant again, and where is it?
I'm kind of old-fashioned. I don't have a computer myself. I'll have my friend send it over as soon as he gets home from work.
Why don't you call him up and tell him what's going to happen because of what they did to you?
You think I ought to warn him?
I think you should call them and give them an opportunity to apologize to you. And if they don't do it, you tell them that I'm going to talk about it on the radio until they do. And if the story holds up, as you said it, we're going to sue them. And you could send my regards. Steve, on the Steve, you can't do this right now. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. See, I put my money where my mouth is. I help people who are trying to help me, unlike people in certain branches of the media. I believe in helping my listeners because they've helped me, achieve what I have. By the way, go to MichaelSavage.com. You'll see a picture of an elephant now on the bottom left. First, we had a picture of a highway patrolman for a week where I announced, again, the story's not up. I'm going to break something in this house. There it is. Savage saves elephants from death. MichaelSavage.com. The Paul Revere Society and Dr. Michael Savage have donated blank to the International Fund for Animal Welfare. And with the money that I contributed, they helped them move a herd of 83 elephants away from poachers who would have killed them just for the tusks. In fact, they shoot them, and while they're suffering on the ground, they cut the tusks out, the dolls in Africa. So the money I contributed helped them move a herd of 83 elephants. It's unbelievable what you can do if you really want to help. And to have somebody try to help me by talking about banned in Britain and the injustice that has been done to an innocent American patriot and have him thrown out of an ersatz Italian restaurant is just got me stewed. On the top left are bath time photos, child pornography. CPS took the children away, put the parents in jail because of innocent bathtub photos. That's the world you live in. You let it happen. You let it happen, and now they want to kick white male conservatives off the radio and replace them with people of color and gays.
Savage.
Talking about a lopsided, topsy-turvy, insane society where the pervs are now inside Child Protective Services. Taking away children from a family, putting the parents in jail because some schmuck at Walmart in the photo department said that the baby pics were child porn, and the moron in the police department said, yes, it was child erotica. Now, any normal parent probably has taken pictures of their beautiful child in a bathtub. I know that I did. I know that my parents did. Maybe they should disinter my deceased parents and arrest their corpses for having taken a picture of me in the 1940s in a bathtub. I mean, is that the society you want to live in? Whether you want to or not, you're living in it because the world is upside down. We now have an FCC diversity czar, something right out of the Soviet Union. And he's saying that he wants more white people out of radio. He wants white conservatives off the air. And he says we need to have more people of color, gays, and other people in radio, or we're not going to change the problem. If you think I'm making it up, play clip two.
We have really, truly good white people in important positions. And the fact of the matter is that there are a limited number of those positions. And unless we are conscious of the need to have more people of color, gays, other people in those positions, we will not change the problem.
So here you have a schmuck, a college schmuck, who sounds to me like he's never held a job in his life. A classic squeaky-voiced professional bureaucrat who's now in charge of diversity. FCC diversity czar Mark Lloyd, and now he wants affirmative action in radio. In other words, it's no longer the free market. In other words, you like Michael Savage? Well, that's ipso facto, that's no good. We don't want the free market to determine anything under the new Obama. We want a centralized, state-run government that controls everything from cradle to grave. In other words, we want a Soviet-style America. Sieg Heil to Mark Lloyd, diversity czar, and Cass Sunstein, regulatory czar. Where did all the czars come from? They came from Obama, who is a neo-Marxist. If it walks like a Marxist, if it talks like a Marxist, it is a Marxist. Now, I know that the media is now taking us very seriously because every other day I see the lackeys in the media saying, why, they're calling Obama a socialist. Why, this country's been half socialist anyway for so long. And what's wrong with socialism anyway? Well, no, I'm not actually calling Obama a socialist, boys. I'm calling him a neo-Marxist. That's a little different. Ramp up the scale of thought. Obama is a neo-Marxist. It doesn't mean he's a bad guy. I mean, he means well. And, of course, you know, the road to you nowhere is paved with good intentions. Just look at Cambodia and Pol Pot. He meant well. And, of course, it ended wrongly, but it didn't matter. After all, he was a college professor, and he tried an experiment that ended up with 2 million human skulls. That's exactly what could happen when you have a lame-brain, do-gooder college teacher becoming president. So let me tell you something. If you oppose Obama's policies, if you oppose Obama's tendency towards authoritarianism, stand up and speak out. You have an obligation to do so. Not only a right, but an obligation. That's my opinion. Chicago, Illinois, Natasha, welcome. You're on to Savage Nation.
Thanks, Dr. Savage. I want to comment about the Walmart fiasco. I am involved in a whole bunch of group of playdates and moms and such, and the women always talk about how, you know, kids should never see you naked, you should never go to sleep with them. I have a wonderful five-year-old boy, and there is no beautiful of a moment than when we go to sleep once a week. We tell stories, we make up stories.
Of course, it's perfectly normal. Let me tell you something, Natasha. It's a cultural phenomenon. Do you know that in Japan and certain other parts of the world, like Samoa, that not only do the children sleep with the parents until they're quite old, like 8, 9, 10, the mother nurses the child until they're 10 or 11 years old in some of these societies. Are you aware of that?
Yes, I am. It's hard.
But what you have now are childless perverts in the Child Protective Services. These are generally, by and large, childless, and they're perverts. They're not married. They're not normal. I'll say it just like it is. I really don't care where it ends up. And they hate the family. They hate the nuclear family. They're doing everything they can to destroy the nuclear family in America. In my opinion, they should be arrested for doing a thing like this. But if I were an attorney, which I thank God I'm not, and I were given the case of a parent falsely accused of this kind of thing for having slept with a child up to a certain age, whatever, you use a cross-cultural defense. And I hope there are some attorneys listening to this show who may not be familiar with the anthropology on this, but there's lots of literature on various societies around the world where children normally sleep with the parents. Every normal parent, every normal family will have a child from time to time who gets upset. They're afraid of the dark. They heard a noise. Someone died in the family. Why should that child be isolated and be forced to sleep in a dark room? Why shouldn't that child be invited into the parents' bed? They are all over the world, except in this sick, demented society of ours, where the perverts make the laws. That's my opinion on it. Take it or leave it. You agree with me, Natasha?
I so agree with you. And I'm telling you, though, I feel like everyone is upside down. I mean, people think this is just weird. And I think, oh, my God, I would never do it differently because I have the best moments of laughing and
That's right. And don't let the pervs make you second-guess yourself. They're childless, and they hate you because you're happy and you have children. And they're now, let's let it go with that. I get so angry at thinking about the kind of demented society that has evolved because of liberalism, the mental disorder, that all I can do is tell you like it is. I'm an older guy. I've raised two children. They're wonderful children. And let me tell you something. This is the way the world is. Just because we're cursed with psychotics in so many governmental positions doesn't mean we all have to become nuts along with them, Natasha. Thanks for the call. San Diego, John, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Mike, I'd like to ask Mark Lloyd, how does he know if somebody's black or white over the radio airwaves? He wants to put, does he even know if I'm black or white? Let me ask him that.
No, well, how does he know that I'm white or black? I guess he could look at the picture of me.
Yeah, I mean, at first, when I first started listening to you, about 10 years ago, I thought you were, you know, you sounded black to me, but it didn't matter to me. It's what you...
I'm glad I sounded black. I told you that. I said on the air the other day, many people used to think what they wanted to think of me, and some people thought I was a black man because of my voice.
I'm not black or white. I'm an American, and that just flies in the face of 90%.
Well, wait, that's the current FCC diversity czar, Mark Lloyd, saying that we need affirmative action in radio. Listen to clip one now. Listen.
Although affirmative action largely benefited white women, that affirmative action was largely viewed as something that was benefiting blacks, not necessarily any of the other racial groups, but by blacks, and that blacks had gotten enough, and that it was time to do something about this, and these affirmative action programs needed to be stopped.
Well, you've certainly benefited by it. I can tell by your speech and by your thought, Mr. Mark Lloyd, that without affirmative action, you certainly wouldn't be where you are. So don't pull that game on me. I can guarantee you wouldn't be where you are was it not for affirmative action. But now, of course, your good friend Obama put you into the FCC. So now you can attack white males who you're jealous of. White males like Michael Savage, who have 50 times your brains, who got where they are not through any help from guys like you and not from any help from anybody, but by crawling on glass. And by working 100 times harder than you, and by not using government to force anything down anyone's throat. I did it purely upon brains and talent, my friend, something you wouldn't know anything about. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, welcome back to the Savage Nation. So what's going on now is nothing short of totalitarianism when you have a president who owns the media, and you have a media who is owned by the president, favors being traded all around, meaning NBC being given very special favors, and as a result treating Obama with kid gloves, so to speak. Now you have czars being put in place who don't belong there. The czars are unconstitutional appointments, number one. They bypassed the normal checks and balances policies of the United States of America. And Obama uses them because he himself, as you well know, is the imposter. So therefore, he puts imposters into diversity positions. Because if these clowns ever try to go before a senatorial hearing, a committee, what do you think they would look like? What would a guy look like who says, take the white conservatives off the radio, put in people of color? Just like that, in a free market, just put him in there. In other words, that's what America needs, whether they want it or not. So if you think that diversity is limited to these clowns in the Obama administration, you're mistaken. And if you think diversity is good for your health, listen to this. Here is a South Carolina mayor, Sally Peek, who's come up with a no foot chase policy for her police department. And she was stopped by a CNN reporter who asked her about the no foot chase policy. Now, notice, I didn't say no car chase. This wonderful genius of a mayor, Sally Peek, has introduced a no-foot chase. In other words, if you're a criminal, just steal and run, and Sally's on your side. I don't know whether Sally has a sack waiting there. What mayor would put this in place? Well, listen to this in 21.
As of this date, there are to be no more foot chase.
And that's okay. What I said, that's what I meant, and that's what I said what I meant, and I meant what I said. They are costing us more money on insurance than most citizens here in the city of Welford.
Are you telling your officers that if they witness a crime, they witness someone commit a crime on someone else, and they're 10 yards away, that they cannot go stop that person?
Is that in there?
It says no chases whatsoever.
Well, that's what I said, no chases, didn't I?
Well, keep going, guys.
I told them no chase on foot. And this guy know exactly what I mean. So you're trying to twist what
I'm
saying.
No, I'm not. You said no chases. No chases means no chases.
You got your story. Thank God. You are so sweet. You got your story on a woman in welfare. Hallelujah. I am so proud of you, Mr. Cato.
I'm just trying to decide what you're telling your officers. I don't think it's out of the question for me to ask you about it. You don't feel like this is possibly putting your citizens at further risk?
No, it's helping my citizens.
How so? If someone escapes from the police and they go hurt someone else, be professional.
Maybe I am. May God bless you.
Let's be reasonable.
May God bless you.
Let's be reasonable.
There's diversity in action. There's diversity in action. South Carolina Mayor Sally Peek coming up with a policy of no foot chases. She didn't even know it was in the policy because she apparently didn't write it. Apparently the criminals wrote it, and she put it in for them. It's unbelievable. There's your country for you. That's what white liberalism has produced in the United States of America. Out of white guilt and good people doing nothing, this is what you're winding up with. Remember, the road to you-know-where is paved with good intentions, my friends. Just remember what I just said to you. The road to you-know-where is paved with good intentions. Kansas City, Teresa, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I was told not to say hi. I have enormous respect for you, and when I want the truth, I listen to you rather than any other maniac.
I'm giving you my version of the truth. This is how I see the world. Is it illegal to have a viewpoint in America under Obama? Is this now illegal to have a viewpoint and an opinion that doesn't coordinate with all of the con artists from Yale? All of the slick con artists from Yale Law?
They don't seem to make any sense to me.
Any sense? These guys couldn't get a job in the real world if they tried. They can only work for Obama. That's all they're fit for. Either Yale or Harvard Law or Obama. That's all they're fit for. They could never work in a real law firm.
Yeah, well, that's true.
You know, Obama never argued a case before a judge, so far as I know. By the way, go to michaelsavage.com and see what wonderful handwriting I have. I wrote a sermon for a Jewish New Year sermon. And you could actually see my handwriting. If you're a handwriting analyst, I'd appreciate it if you'd read it. It's in my handwriting. I'd like to see what you think of it. Let's say you want. Cursive writing is a dying art form. But if you look at my writing, other than the first paragraph, which I crossed out and modified 10 years after I originally wrote it, look how clean and smooth my first draft is. Look how clear my mind is. Look how clear this undiverse mind really is. Look how smooth the writing is for this undiverse man. Look how nice it is for a man who wasn't put in place by government. I can actually write cursive letters, paragraph after paragraph, looking like it's calligraphy. Look what an undiverse mind can do without being re-educated by the Obama administration. It's amazing to me what you could do with a clear mind that's not muddled by Yale University Law School. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Lots of things going on. One thing after another. One thing after another, because liberalism, the mental disorder, has now metastasized like a virus through the entire country. Ed in Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, nice speaking to you. Listen, after hearing that exchange between the mayor and the reporter, I'm just lost for words. I'm wondering, have I been actually asleep for the last 40 years? I wake up and I don't recognize what's going on in my country.
Well, she's the Welford, South Carolina mayor, and she put out a law saying no foot chases. So even a CNN reporter said, what if the cop's 10 feet away? And she starts saying, hallelujah, God bless you. You got what you wanted, this poor welfare woman. She reverted back to how she got where she is.
Just lost for words. I just can't believe I've heard something as idiotic as is coming from an elected...
Well, when I'm lost for words, then the FCC diversity chief will be happy when I'm at a loss for words. Thus far, I'm not at a loss for words yet.
I hope you're around for the next 40 or 50 years. We really need...
Well, don't count on that one, my friend. I would modify that by a factor of 20. But I'll tell you what I'm going to do for you. I'm sending you a free copy of Banned in Britain when it's ready. I'm going to make an announcement right now to all my listeners. This week only, go ahead, take it away. Free copy, free autographed picture of Michael Savage and Teddy the dog. Autographed for free. Every copy of Banned in Britain sold this week only. Go ahead, take it away. Walk away cocktail. Go ahead, walk-away cocktail. No, on Fisherman's Wharf they have that. The guy's got take it away, walk-away cocktail. People love that. Or they love those round breads, the sourdough with the soup in it. That's another favorite they like. I did, too, when the kids were young. That's all we could, you know, afford, a walk-away cocktail and a bread soup. Nothing wrong with it. You sit on the curb. You get psittacosis from the bird feathers. What could be better? You sit there. You look inside restaurants that you can't afford to go in, and you build up the psittacosis resistance. What could be? Oh, God. Well, I have to have a sense of humor. I couldn't do this another second. So Obama's doing a Vietnam now on Afghanistan. The man who came to power as an anti-war man is now going to double the military. And General McChrystal, probably a good man, and I'm an armchair general, I admit it, is saying that without more troops, we're going to lose in Afghanistan. But wait, it gets worse. You know, there's more troops in Afghanistan or we lose. I have no problem with that, but not to fight, mind you. No, he wants them to become policemen. He wants to win the hearts and minds of the Afghanis. Now, I don't know if General McChrystal is a highly educated man. I don't even know if he read the history of Afghanistan. But methinks the British tried winning the hearts and minds of the tribes in Afghanistan. And so far as I remember, the ground is littered with the blood and bones of dead Brits going back quite a long while. In fact, I can read you a poem about the Khyber Pass a little later on, if you'd like to know what's coming. You don't win a war by sending troops over and telling them not to fire. Now, wait, it gets worse. The great genius general, McChrystal, I don't know who's the armchair general, him or me, has said we need more troops and we want them outside of the armored vehicles. We want boots on the ground. Now he says, admittedly, more of our men will die, but it'll make the Afghanis feel better. So if your son or daughter is in the military, get ready to hear that a body bag is on the way to you with a nice folded flag. Because that way, well, you don't offend the Afghanis that you're trying to get over on your side. You let them kill your troops, capture them, kidnap them, behead them. Then you'll have a happy Afghani people. The last thing you want to do is bomb them into submission, because that would be too much like war. And, of course, we're not really at war. We're just in a fake war. And in a fake war, what you do is you turn your troops into policemen and you put them at risk. The way cops in the streets of America are now put at risk. Tell them, get out of the police car and go walk around in a bad neighborhood. Because it's them doing it, not you. It's not the police chief. It's you. It's you. It's the cop on the street. The soldier on the street. He's the one that has to get shot or bombed. Take him outside of the armored vehicle and put him in the ground so the Afghanis could either capture him, shoot him, cut his legs off, cut his head off on the internet. But then they'll be a happy people. That way the Afghanis will be a happy population. If they have more American heads to hang on their doorposts, they might actually become Americans. We might be able to open up falafel stands for them with billions of dollars in contractor aid. Maybe even a sort of falafel stand on every corner. Or a meat stand of some kind that the Afghanis like, some type of meat that they like. And we can get a couple of contractors now who used to work for Bush, who are now Democrats, who worked for Obama, to go over there and build the falafel stands. And we'll call that war. Call that the new kind of war. Build a falafel stand on every corner with American money. Another couple of $1 trillion down the toilet. And then leave in 10 years and say, whoops, made a mistake. Oops, we should have gotten out when I came in, but hey, what the heck, I'm now out of office, and there's no longer in America, it's just one little happy world now. Have a nice day, I'm now the president of the world, and don't you love how I'm loved everywhere, wherever I go? Have a nice day.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Diverse men in China can have some aphrodisiacs and some ivory. And so, therefore, that's why I have sympathy for the elephants and, of course, the mountain gorillas and the dogs and the cats and the birds and the beasts of the earth, because they are the innocent of the earth compared to the wonderful creature called Homo sapiens. As you well know, we are such a wonderful, refined species, and everything we do is with God's blessing. Welcome to the Savage Nation. We are talking about the foibles of Homo sapiens and the wonders of all of the other animals of the earth today on the Savage Nation. Let's go to the callers. Bernadette in Modesto, California. Thank you for calling. You're on the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, Doctor. I just wanted to let you know, and I want to thank you for your support for the animals, and that's the same organization that I donate to. And when I was looking on the website, I saw they had a video of the whole rescue. And I didn't know that you were a part of it, but now that I do.
Well, I mean, I'm not the whole thing. I gave a certain amount of money. It's on michaelsavage.com. And the group said that this money helped them move 83 elephants literally out of the country to get away from the poachers.
Yes.
I have a soft spot for creatures like this. Well, when I see a mountain gorilla family, you see, some people say, like, it's, you see, this is a relativism. It's very interesting. Some people would say, why do you have sympathy for a mountain gorilla family but no sympathy, let's say, for a newt or a cockroach? Aren't they the same? In the larger scheme of things, you could argue that a cockroach is the same as a mountain gorilla, couldn't you?
Yeah.
In the larger scheme of things. But why do I have sympathy for a mountain gorilla or an elephant while I have no sympathy for a cockroach or a fly? I mean, I will, if I have a choice, let a fly out of a room. I do it all the time, or a moth. I won't go out of my way to kill it. I just have this karmic little thing. All right, whatever. Who knows what's coming tomorrow? And who knows what's coming at the end of the road? And is this just one life along the way of zillions of lives we're going to lead, and this is a test? I mean, whatever you want to look at it. And secondly, I mean, when I see a fly, because I'm a biologist by training, I don't just see a nuisance flying around. I've looked at a fly's eye through a microscope when I was 16 years old, and I was astounded at the genius of the creator that could create the fly. So I don't crush an organism just for the fun of crushing an organism. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Thank you for the call. Anyway, the point is, yes, thank you for noticing about the elephant. We were talking about our bath time photos, child pornography, because the wonderful geniuses in CPS, Child Protective Services, took away a family's children and put the parents in jail. And the state Nazis investigated because they took bath time photos of their own children. Unbelievable to me, the world we're living in. Gaddafi is now in New York. He has a pistol pack and posse of women bodyguards. Isn't diversity grand? Brotherly leader Muhammad Gaddafi will be invading Midtown Manhattan this week, surrounded by a gang of gun girls. Oh, that should be very exciting. Oh, wow, the meatpacking district should be. They should invite Gaddafi in for a little floor show with his gun-toting murderers. On the air, Prez seems like endless infomercial. Obama ready to slash U.S. nuke arsenal. Did you know that? In addition to cutting back on the defense shield in Czechoslovakia and Poland, our great leader, the man whose side we don't know which side he's on, is now going to cut nuclear weapons to prepare the way for deep cuts in the country's arsenal. Which side is he on? Which team is he playing on? Does anyone know? Raise your hand if you know for sure that Obama's playing on America's side. Oh, I realize that Charlie Gibson believes that anyone who says anything like this is causing trouble and we're not polite. Or, for example, if I point out that the active terror cell that was broken up by the FBI, all of the members of the active terror cell are Islamo fascist types, why, then that could be considered to be undiverse, that viewpoint, because I'm racially profiling. Now, it is true that it is correct what I just said. None of them were nuns. None of them were Jews. None of them were Christians. None of them were Buddhists. Now, of course, it's logic and commonsensical, but since we live in a country where logic and common sense are now considered undiverse and therefore racist or something, we have to look out for anybody who can still logically reason and want to defend themselves rationally. And therefore, I exist. And that is why talk radio is 90-some-odd percent conservative, because it's the last vestige of reasonable discussion. Acorn Chief Dodge's call to come before Congress. Really? Why would she do that? Another woman, there's another example of another great genius. Let's see, New York governor, another great. Carter security advisor says U.S. should block Israeli jets if they try to attack Iran. You know who he is, don't you? Brzezinski? I think he has a daughter on the morning on More Snotty Nonsense by Chicks. Brzezinski's daughter belongs on that channel. I think he should take a job on MSNBC. He'd be perfect for it. Him and Pat Buchanan could go out afterwards for a nice brew. Him and Brzezinski could go out for a couple of brewskis, put on the old uniforms, you know. They might not fit in them. I mean, in Brzezinski's case, he could probably still get into that uniform. I don't know if Buchanan could get into the one he has behind the wall that spins, the secret wall, and that turns around Deutschland über alles. So, let's see, what else? McChrystal failure without Morrison, we covered that. Savage saves elephants from death. Yeah, I could take credit for it, even if I save one elephant. He who saves a single elephant is as though he saved the entire herd. And did you hear what I played for you earlier? You got to hear this. This you got to hear. I'll play it again now. Well, listen up first. I set it up. In South Carolina, there's a city called Welford. It sounds like Wellbutrin, like an antipsychotic medication. Anyway, wherever that place is, there's a mayor named Sally Peake. So the genius mayor put out a no-foot chase policy on the police. So even radical leftist CNN has a reporter, a young reporter who might be fired now, who catches up with Mayor Sally Peake to ask her, what sense does this make, a no-foot chase? Listen to 21 and 22.
As of this date, there are to be no more foot chase.
And that's okay. What I said. That's what I meant. And that's what I said what I meant. And I meant what I said. They are costing us more money on insurance than most citizens here in the city of Welford.
Are you telling your officers that if they witness a crime, they witness someone commit a crime on someone else, and they're 10 yards away, that they cannot go stop that person?
Is that in there?
It says no chases whatsoever.
Well, that's what I said, no chases. I told them no chase on foot, and this guy knows exactly what I mean. So you're trying to twist what
I'm saying. No, I'm not. You said no chases. No chases means no chases.
You got your story. Thank God. You are so sweet. You got your story on a woman in welfare. Hallelujah. I am so proud of you, Mr. Cato.
I'm just trying to decide what you're telling your officers. I don't think it's out of the question for me to ask you about it. You don't feel like this is possibly putting your citizens at further risk?
No, he's helping my citizens.
How so? If someone escapes from the police and they go hurt someone else, you're professional.
Maybe I am. May God bless you.
Let's be reasonable.
May God bless you.
Let's be reasonable.
See, now, reason is a white man's thing, that kind of thing. That kind of inordinate reliance upon logic and reason is trace it back. It's based upon the Greek thought process, which is, it's racist when you think about it, because it's not diverse. What you have to have is no reason. A lack of reason would show that you have a sufficient sensitivity to the needs of the people who do not want to use reason in order to put laws in place that make no sense whatsoever. But if you rely too much upon reason, it means that you're a reasonable person, which is unto itself suspect in the new America, where reason is considered to be racist. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, where reason prevails, something that is a threat and a danger to the Obama administration. Reason is now suspect, particularly Aristotelian logic. I mean, unto itself, that could be considered to be racist when you think about it, because Aristotle was European, in a way, Greek, you know, old white male. All of Western civilization was built upon logic and reason, deductive logic and reasoning. And it's suspect in the Obama administration. You can't have reason. In other words, when you remove a missile protective shield from Czechoslovakia, logic would dictate that you stabbed two allies in the back who depended upon you. But if you don't have logic and you don't use reason, you become emotional and say that's a good thing, because less missile defense shields means less missiles. And then what you have is diversity of thought. You see how it works? And don't try to apply logic or reason, because you'll come up with the correct conclusion, which is a threat to the national security, not of this state, but of the Soviet Union. And since we don't know which side the president might be on at any one moment, whether he's playing for this team or that team, you don't want to drive yourself crazy by thinking like this. It's the same as this little microcosm called Welford, South Carolina, where Mayor Sally Peake says no foot chases. So even the reporter for CNN, who apparently went to a journalism school, I don't know how he got through that he would even dare do this. I mean, this kid is a threat to the CNN structure. See, she stops the mayor and says, what do you mean no foot chases, even if a cop's 10 feet away and seeing a crime? And she starts in with the hallelujah, God bless you, you picked on me, what I said is what I meant, God bless you. This is what I mean. The young man used reason and logic, which how he got into a journalism school and got out is amazing. Since all they take are RDDBs, red diaper dopa babies, unless you're an RDDB, you can't get into a journalism school. And if you're still only an RDDB when you get out, Not only a red diaper dopa baby, but a neo-Marxist dopa baby, ropa dopa baby. I would say that in order to get out of a journalism school, you have to be an overt, a Marxist ropa dopa baby. That's a new one I just invented. I've gone from an RDDB. Now I have to come up with a new acronym, which is I have to write it down. Sorry, my hand keep up with my mind. A Marxist, what did I just say? A Marxist ropa dopa baby. A Marxist ropa dopa baby. Okay, that's not bad. An R-M-R-D-B. Okay, we got. No, I like R-D-D-B better. But in other words, you get out of a journalism school, you have to be a Marxist rope-a-dope baby. And how this kid got out, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? 1-800-449-whatever. I forgot my number. I don't even know my phone. It's the days of awe. See, for most religious people who were Jewish, it's the days of awe. But for Barney Frank and Rahm Emanuel, these are the days of awe. This is when they really get it out of them, out of the ORE. This is the days of awe. They never had so much awe in their life. Since Obama came to power and those two wonderful human beings got positions that they're not entitled to, they're in the days of awe. They look at the awe coming in and flowing out through their hands, and wow, they say, this is the days of awe. Listen to Barney Frank a year ago, gloating about a religious holiday without realizing the faux pas he was making, saying these are the days of awe. Do we have that right now? The days of awe thing? But you think he's saying days of awe, D-A-Y-S of A-W-E, meaning awe of God. But no, Barney Frank meant, I think, days of awe, the D-A-Z-E of O-R-E, because Obama and his minions, particularly Barney Frank himself has gotten so much awe, so flowing through his hands since he's been a committee member. He is a novelty rule, that is. It's a days of awe for him and Rahm. Him and Rahm is very important days of awe.
Can we have that now, please, or have to keep improvisational here without the neon lights behind me? I'm suffering here. I'm suffering this. It's supposed to be a production where you find it and press a button, and I'm up here. All right, what a team. I guess it was too big a weekend for them.
And I really feel a great sense of responsibility for Rahm and for me and for many others. These are the days of awe. The days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur for Jewish people.
Yeah, all right. We got the message. Thank you. That was last year. He was so thrilled with his finger in the till that he was talking already about God. Even he found God. Even he could believe in God for that. He was so happy with what had happened in his life. A schnook like him, a nobody, a marginal nobody, wound up on top, that even he became religious for that period of time. Kenny in New York on WOR, welcome to the Savage.
Doctor,
hey, I'm getting in so much trouble today, Kenny. I've never had so much fun in years.
You've made me much less nervous, by the way. I want to commend you for being, once again, a man of substance. Just by proving your willingness to stand up and fight for what is right with that one gentleman caller earlier from the restaurant encounter.
Oh, that's right. I'm gonna help that caller fight that restaurant. He's not going to throw a listener of mine out for expressing his opinion if I can help it.
God bless you. And also, concerning this ridiculous mayor in South Carolina, give it a month or two and crime will increase tenfold probably.
Well, I think she should have some people come down there and conduct crimes now because it's a safe haven, particularly if they've got the right sneakers.
It will happen. God bless you, Dr. Sapp.
Maybe the mayor can give out sneakers to everyone coming in so they can run away from the police. See, she says no foot chases. No, that doesn't mean she's in favor of crime. Logic would dictate that it will increase crime. But since this woman is not interested in seeing crime go up, she meant well, but as you well know, do-gooders often lead to very bad things. The road to you-know-where is paved with good intentions. So she probably read a report from a liberal who fronts for a gang that chases of any kind, car chases, foot chases. Well, you could even argue that police themselves cause crime by being police, that if there were no police, there'd be no crime. See, the next logical step is to not only disarm the police, but take away the police departments altogether. And to the liberals, we'll all be dancing together because there'll be no crime. The only reason people commit crime is because of the evil police presence to the liberal. And if you have no police, they wouldn't be induced to react. It's a reactive thing. Is that God bless you, hallelujah, God be with you. If you only understood what the effect the police have upon the mind of the underprivileged, you will come to see that the underprivileged are not inherently wanting to commit that crime. They are reacting to the pig. And if you remove the pig, there is no crime. They will all be happy. That's the way to see it. Now, it's the same with McChrystal in Afghanistan. It's the same thinking of Obama. What you do is you increase the number of troops, but you take them out of the armored vehicle, and you put them down on the ground. Now, admittedly, more of them are going to die, be captured, have their heads cut off on the internet, but that's the price we have to pay for nation building. We want to make the good people of Afghanistan feel better about America. So even though you are at war, you don't use planes, you don't use bombs, you don't use bullets. What you do is you sacrifice human flesh, American flesh. You give human flesh over to the Afghani tribal throwbacks. And if they have enough flesh, if they have enough American blood, if they have destroyed enough American life, and if they have drunk American blood sufficient to their cause, why then all will be well, according to the Obamaites.
Savage.
health care, taxes, government motors, government health, czar this, czar that, czar Nikolai. Everywhere you turn, another Obama czar, another overeducated moron who never earned a nickel in his life that wasn't either public or some kind of foundation grant. Never met a payroll, but they're running everything now. And you can hear their squeaky voices. They don't know what they're talking about. Well, you think all of them are just idealistic and that they all want a utopia, don't you? You're wrong. Just came out an hour ago, U.S. charges Obama fundraiser in $290 million fraud. You heard it right. Hassan Namazi, a fundraiser for Barack Hussein Obama, Hillary Clinton, and other Democrats, has been indicted for defrauding Bank of America, HSBC, and Citigroup, Inc. out of more than $290 million in loan proceeds, U.S. prosecutors said on Monday. Now, let's pause right here. You wondered where the bank bailout money was going. You wondered where all the money came from, where it's all going to. But let's continue reading the story. The announcement follows last month's indictment of Namazi, head of a private equity firm, and an Iranian-American Political Action Committee board member on one count of defrauding Citigroup's Citibank. The new indictment adds allegations that he defrauded two other banks, B of A and HSBC Bank USA, in a similar fashion. How? By falsifying documents and signatures to purportedly show he had hundreds of millions of dollars worth of collateral. The Office of the U.S. Attorney in Manhattan and the FBI said he used the proceeds of his scheme to make donations to election campaigns of federal, state, and local candidates, donations to political action committees and charities, all Democrats. His lawyer could not immediately be reached for comment. As of August 2009, Namazi owed B of A about $142 million and owed Citibank about $74.9 million. He drew on a line of credit he fraudulently obtained from the HSBC to pay the Citibank loan. Namazi, age 59, typically donates more than $100,000 annually to Democratic political candidates. He is listed as one of the top bundlers of contributions to Obama's 2008 presidential campaign, according to OpenSecrets.org, a website run by the Center for Responsive Politics Research Group. For more than 10 years, Hassan Namazi projected the illusion of wealth, stealing more than $290 million so that he could lead a lavish lifestyle and play the part of a heavyweight political fundraiser, U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara said in Manhattan in a statement. Namazi was arrested at Newark Liberty International Airport, New Jersey, on August 23. He was checking in for a flight to Italy, according to court papers. He was released on bail. So now let's go back, boys and girls. $290 million in loans fraudulently obtained, spent by this guy, allegedly. And the man is a big fundraiser for Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Now let's go back to the stimulus bill. Let's go back to the bank bailout. Now you understand where the money went. Remember what I just said to you. You understand how it works? And you want to talk about trivial things? Go ahead, talk about trivial things. Anything you want. What a story this is. U.S. charges Obama fundraiser. Now, Eric Holder could, of course, dismiss the charges. He could say that it's racist, or it could be based upon racial profiling, that they picked on him because he's Iranian-American. After all, probably white men are probably doing it, and they didn't pick on them. So any day I expect Eric Holder to say that it's not going to be pursued, even though the FBI may have data. You know, Eric Holder released the Puerto Rican terrorists, so why shouldn't they release an Obama fundraiser? It's only $290 million. Barney Frank could always raise that money in the days of war. Barney Frank could get more money like that. In a minute, he could print it. He could take it from a government office. He could. Wait, I have a better idea. Why don't they take this guy? Here, wait a minute. I wasn't thinking clearly. Sorry, I was using logic for a minute instead of Obama illogic. What you do is you take a man like this with such experience in embezzlement, according to the FBI, and where do you put him? Where his knowledge of embezzlement, excuse me, of creative financing can be best put to use. You put a man like this inside the – make him a banking czar. If he becomes a banking czar, who else would know best about how fraud is committed than him? And who else could prevent fraud, that is, fraud of others? This way he can continue to do it because you let him do $300 million a year, let's say, but he can prevent others from conducting fraud because he knows how it's done. So that way Eric Holder can get a twofer. He releases the he takes the charges away, and he gives the man a nice job outside of jail. He could argue that he could be of more use to society working for the government – than spending time in a slammer. See, this is how it works. This is how illogic works. This is what you mean. You don't want to use Aristotelian logic and justice. Don't seek truth and justice, because you may not be diverse if you seek truth and justice. And the most important thing is diversity, isn't it? Wow, I'm having fun. It must be that espresso. I thought Monday would be a dead day, but every time I fire myself up with an espresso, I go locked and go off here like this. The mind, that stuff, that caffeine really works.
I love the government's cracking down on sugar and caffeine. The only thing you should take is antidepressants and marijuana, but since most of the mayors and liberal mayors are on marijuana and antidepressants, and therefore they want to illegalize caffeine and sugar. See, caffeine and sugar are free ways to stimulate your mind. That's your cerebrum. Caffeine, I learned in Pharmacology 101 way back when I was just the beginning of graduate school, is that caffeine is a wonderful substance. It's a very mild cerebral stimulant. But since it's relatively free and non-toxic, the government has to come up with a way to make caffeine illegal, and of course sugar as well. That way they'll put all of you on antidepressants, which will satisfy a lobbying group called the American Pharmaceutical Association and the AMA, because they need more victims in the medical offices, particularly in the crackpot psychiatrist offices. So they take you off sugar, they take you off caffeine, and they put you on antidepressants, and they tell you need medical marijuana as well. Then they got you every which way to Sunday. And on top of it all, they have you as a moron, a useful idiot on drugs. See, again, I'm sorry for using too much logic here and too much fact. I realize that the new diversity czar in the FCC doesn't want logic and fact. What he wants is diversity. Now, if the diverse person happens to have logic and fact, that's sort of a secondary plus. But don't put that ahead of the reason for anything else, why the show is so popular. If you think my show is popular simply because I'm an entertainer, maybe you're right. But you got to remember that behind the entertainment, after 15 years in radio, there must be some logic, some reason, some knowledge, some history, some science, some poetry, some reason, and some art. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here, Johnson. Arizona, Mark, you on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Savage, it's a pleasure to speak to you. I'm calling because I heard your comment about the mayor in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, makes me think about going back into crime.
Well, it's a good place to try and see if it can work for you, because she put out a law that says no foot chases by the police because it might cause damage to a storefront.
Yes, absolutely.
Or the criminals probably sued the police when they twisted an ankle while the cops were chasing them. That may be what she means by liability. So I would think get yourself a new pair of running shoes and head out to Welford, South Carolina, where Mayor Sally Peaks will defend her no-foot chase policy.
It's absolutely ridiculous. The only thing that makes somebody stop doing what they're doing is to know that they're going to be caught.
Well, but that's the whole thing, is that you don't want them to be nervous about being a criminal because it makes them worse. See, to the liberal mind, Mark, you're not using reason here. I mean, excuse me, you're using too much reason. You're not using liberal think. To a liberal, the only reason a person commits crime is either they're an oppressed person or a poor person, or they're threatened by the police. If there was no oppression and no differential in society and there were no police, there'd be no crime. See, when you lock up all the police and you put all the people with things away and take their things, there's no crime. You understand how it works, Mark? That's how Hitler made Germany thrive. It was a broken nation. The economy was busted. But by stealing the property of the Jews that he said were evil, and by stealing the property of everyone else that he didn't like and giving it to the pigs inside the Nazi movement, you had trickle-down wealth in Germany. And it worked for him. That's more or less what you're going to have with Obama in a certain way. Not making a gross comparison here, but I coined the phrase trickle-up poverty, which is what you're getting. I warned you you'd have trickle-up poverty. The hemorrhoid hasn't stolen that one yet, has he? I get emails now from people in the media who say, wait, how could he get away with this? He stole this idea from a column I wrote 2 months ago in this magazine. Then I get on another colleague and says, the hemorrhoid stole this from me. He wrote it 3 months ago. Then the hemorrhoid stole it. I said, look, leave me alone. The hem's having a good time right now. Let him enjoy himself. He's riding high, and pride cometh before you know what. So just let it go. God sees the truth but waits. Everyone knows he's a fraudster and a ripoff artist. Everybody knows that. So what do I care? What does it matter to me? I got to tell you, let me go back for it. Can I take a deep breath? Go one, two, three. Breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. Oh, that feels good, man. That's good. I just took a toke of the O2. It feels good, I got to tell you. Every time I go to a restaurant, I ask them, can I have a dish for Teddy? And he brings me out water like, Hetch Hetchy 09. And I say, that's my dog champagne. Bring me a glass of that too. That costs nothing. I don't even drink bottled water anymore. It's just like Hetch Hetchy with ice. My favorite new drink. If it works for my dog, it must work for me. I'm not saying I'm ready to try the dog food, but I'm telling you the truth. There's a little crossover here. The dog food I give him is more or less what I eat anyway. I went to a restaurant last night. I got him a hamburger. There's a double reason I give him a hamburger before I order. Why? Because what I order takes, like, in a certain restaurant I go to, it's like 20 minutes till they make the beef bourguignon, or 20 minutes for the this. Meanwhile, the dog's hamburger, no salt and pepper, comes out in 3 minutes, and I eat half of it. It's like an appetizer. What could be better? It's like having a child. There are advantages to having a child. You get to eat candy, which you don't eat anymore. You get to act like an idiot running around, you're walking on all fours on the floor. That's the beauty of having children and grandchildren, is you can become a child again. And that's the beauty of having a dog, is you can start doing, you can get away with things like ordering a hamburger before the meal for the dog and eat half of it. What does he know? He's only 10 pounds. Now, don't think I'm ripping off my dog's food by doing it. Let me explain something to you. If he weighs 10 pounds, just do math with me. If you can still do math in your head, I only do math in my head. I taught myself never to use a computer for math, which is why no one can rob me of money. I don't need to go to a digital calculator. My brain was built way back in the HAL 9000 days in the Bronx, where I had to memorize mathematical tables. I know that's hard for the diversity chief to remember, but I don't need a calculator to do simple math. So my dog weighs 10 pounds, and let's say I don't want to give too much away. I weigh 170. For argument's sake, that's what I'm now, around, no, 160. I don't know what I, no, 170. Okay, I can't lie. So the dog's 10, I'm 170. So I'm 17 times heavier than the dog, right? So here's the short answered question for the math test. If I give the dog a quarter-pound burger, what is that equivalent in meat to a 170-pound man? That's ridiculous, like eating a horse. So he doesn't need a quarter-pound burger. He'll eat like a python till he explodes. So I have to, like, calculate backwards and give him 1/11 of what I'm giving him. You don't give him a man-sized hamburger, and this restaurant doesn't give him a quarter-pounder. This guy, he's an old friend of mine. He's a Basque guy. And he gives him a burger. Oh, you pay for it. What's the difference? But no, it's a nice piece of meat. This is no leftover. This is not from Walmart, from the meat that fell underneath when the holiday ended under the truck while the guy was off on a vacation and it rolled over in the sun a few times and actually started to run away from the meat packet. It's not that kind of meat. We're talking about a grade A hamburger, you know? So let's say you take, what, he's giving me a half of him? No, it couldn't be a half. A third of a pound of meat. Now I'm going to get complicated. If a dog weighs 10 pounds and a man weighs 170 pounds and he gives him a third of a pound of a hamburger, and he gets a third of a pound of a hamburger on the table, what size hamburger should he give the dog to make certain that the dog doesn't drop dead of a heart attack? I'll be right back.
Savage.
The one and only Savage Nation. I've only scratched the surface today. I mean, I was dragging my you-know-what over the weekend saying, I don't even want to go on the air Monday. I can't take it anymore. With all these czars and all of this movement towards totalitarianism and all these criminals, everywhere I turn, another crook. And I speak to Democrats who say that no matter who you're going to put in there, you're going to get the same thing. People are really pissed off at the government. No wonder Obama wants a diversity czar. So get guys like me off the radio. You get more of the people who say, you know, hail Obama, hail the government. We love the government. Like David Gregory, whatever he is. God, a shame. You watch Mad Men, you see the outfits. You think the guy's perfect because he's got a nice haircut and a good suit. Empty suits. That's what an empty suit is. That's why I let my hair grow long and put on sandals and left New York in 1967. I didn't want to go down that road. I once worked a straight job. I did. I mean, I worked in a corporation. I pity you if you have to. I don't know how you could take it. The conformity, my God. Even the wingtip shoes alone could give you a stroke at that 40, 41. I knew I wouldn't make it. I just couldn't play that game. I told you, I went to work in a straight corporation once. I was a young guy, good-looking, 22, 23. New York Publishing, exactly like a company in Mad Men. Same kind of building. Everyone was like picture-perfect and afraid of their own shadow. And they fired me. They said, because you wear brown shoes, not black shoes. They said, that's an indicator that you're... I said, what are you talking about? I like brown shoes. They were beautiful. They're expensive brown shoes, the blue suit. I said, well, we don't wear brown shoes. I swear to God, they fired me for wearing brown shoes. I can even give the name of the publishing company. I think they're out of business. A textbook publisher at that time. So, trust me, I know what conformity is. It doesn't mean if you're a nonconformist, you're necessarily a genius. Or that you're, you know, brighter than the conformist. But, you know, consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. Just take a look at Obama. Honolulu, Martin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I just wanted to say a big thank you for your essay regarding Rosh Hashanah posted on your website. I'm presently reading Maimonides' 613 mitzvah of the Torah in English and in Hebrew. But
wow. Are you a Christian or a Jew?
I'm a Christian, and I just came from lunch with a bunch of people who asked me to explain Rosh Hashanah. They thought I was a Jew. And I said, well, to the best of my understanding, for during this period of time, God is judging each and every one of us, not just the Jews, but everyone on earth. And then they shot back, well, you know, my God is non-judgmental. I said, well, good for you. And then I just...
Yeah, good for you. Let me tell you something. God is very judgmental. That's how I see the world. God's a real angry God. He's very judgmental, Martin. That's the world I live in.
Well,
my God is non-judgmental. Hey, God is not your friend, Martin. I've said that before on the radio. God is not your friend. He's not Mr. Rogers. He doesn't wear a cardigan and tell you, I'm sorry, how do you feel today? You know, come on in for a cup of tea. That's passé. Look, either religion is hard-nosed, hellfire and brimstone to me, or it's worthless. That's how I see it. I never liked going in where everyone's so, you know, there's nothing there. I don't go for it. It's not my idea of religion. To me, religion has to be real strong, like biblical, lightning bolts. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. If you continue to fail at religion, then you create one without a judgmental God. That's what
God doesn't want you to celebrate with him. He's not looking to do a folk dance with you. I mean, if he's looking to do a folk dance with you, it's not God already. It's already a false God. God is a punishing God. God is a harsh God. God is angry all the time. He's just pissed off at everybody because we're no damn good. And he knows it, Martin.
Thank you for...
He knows. He made us. And he knows what we are. Well, I'm so happy that you went on to michaelsavage.com to see the Jewish New Year sermon. Because I wrote that with all good intention, Martin. And I thank you. Martin, let me send you a copy of Banned in Britain when it's out. I really would appreciate it if you'd accept that from me. Anyone who orders that book this week, I'm going to give out free pictures of Teddy Michael Sein, Beating the Liberal Blacklist, Banned in Britain, the book that will not be available in stores pretty much for sure in 2009. It might be available maybe in 2010. I don't know. Maybe not. To this day, psychological nudity is not in a bookstore. I don't need them. They don't want me. They want to publish pseudo-conservative books. Good luck to them. They want another pseudo-conservative hack book. They can have it. They want a real book about a real banning of a real American media personality that they won't touch. You talk about madmen and conformity. Don't look any further than the fraudulent publishers of New York City. Don't look any further than them. I don't need them. They don't need me. Good luck to them. Only available on michaelsavage.com. It's a new world order. It's a new world order with tremendous diversity of marketing. You know what's amazing? I realize I sit in my house with a fax machine, with email, with a telephone. You can run an empire. You don't have to go to an office. You don't have to get a haircut. You could just let the nails grow. You know, you could do the spruce goose act here. It doesn't matter. Who would know? Who would know if the nails are 6 inches long and whatever, sitting in a chair? They wouldn't know. What do they care? All they care about is I got the horsepower and the brains to keep doing it. How long can you do a thing like this? I went to dinner last night. I had dinner, and a very close person to me said, you know, even Jerry Seinfeld could have gone on many more years, but he did 10 years, and he really cut off Seinfeld. Now, I never watched Seinfeld real. Once in a while I watched it. It's not my cup of tea. I don't go for the step and fetch a Jew act. Woody Allen showed me that one. You know, hello, I'm Arnold Stang. Look at the Jew making a fool of himself. That's like when the blacks used to make a mockery of themselves. People love that one. I mean, look how far Woody Allen got with putting down Jews. So to make a long story short, I said, yeah, that's true. 15 years in radio is a long time. But there's no other life for me. This is it. It's either seek truth and justice or don't exist. So think of me in that regard. As long as God wants me, I'll be here. Hope you will too.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, it goes on and on and on. The new chairman of the war in Afghanistan, General McChrystal, warns of failure in Afghan war unless, fill in the blank, more troops are sent to Afghanistan. I read Mr. McChrystal's, General McChrystal's plan, but he's not talking about fighting them in battle. He is talking about using an increased presence of the military in Afghanistan as a police force to protect the Afghan citizens to win hearts and minds. Here we go again. This is called the Vietnam syndrome of the United States military. We have never overcome the Vietnam syndrome. We're going to lose this war as sure as I'm standing here. You're going to protect the citizens, and then what? They're going to love you? They're going to stab you in the back by night after taking your money, your uniforms, and your weapons by day. That's how it seems to me. It's a police force. They're making the military into a police force. They're not trained to be a police force. The real question is Afghanistan worth the U.S. commitment? That's number one. I don't think so. I still don't understand the rationale, truthfully. I keep hearing from the conservative movement that if we are defeated in Afghanistan, the victory will be the enemy's, and they will gloat, and they'll bring it to our shores. I don't buy it anymore. I'm sorry. Either you suppress the whole nation, you kill all of the enemy, you occupy the nation for 25 years, or you get the hell out of there. I mean, what, we haven't learned from history? Either it's total war or it's no war, okay? This is nonsense. There's no such thing as a half-assed war. Because look at Iraq. Take Iraq as a model. Did we win in Iraq? I mean, did we win in Iraq? You could say, well, we did a George Bush go slow Mr. Pieper's approach. Not total war, right? And we won. We didn't win. We didn't win. Women are being oppressed. Gays are being killed. They've aligned themselves with Iran. What did we win there? They won't give us a barrel of oil. What did we win in Iraq?
They call Afghanistan the graveyard of empires. Is it going to be the graveyard for our empire?
I hope not, but it looks to me like here we go again. I mean, who lost in there? We know the British got their military destroyed in Afghanistan.
The Russians, too.
The Russians, with the strongest military on earth, were defeated and driven out of Afghanistan. Attack helicopters, tanks, bombers, driven out by men on donkeys. Looks like we got a bunch of donkeys running America right now, huh? Sounds like donkeys, you know what. It's depressing, Beowulf, because it seems to me Obama is a factotum of the same power structure. He came to power as an anti-war candidate, and now he wants to ramp up the war in Afghanistan. Don't you have a soundbite on that?
It is time to start bringing our troops home. It's time to admit that no amount of American lives can resolve the political disagreement that lies at the heart of someone else's civil war.
It's the exact same thing. We haven't changed in 45 years since LBJ did the same thing with Vietnam.
Here we go again. You read the whole article. Changes in Afghanistan require a different strategy, meaning protecting the civilians, all wrong. Then we've got the issue of Obama last week stabbing Poland and Czechoslovakia in the back with building a missile defense shield. And I said, well, maybe Russia has given a green light to Israel to attack Iran. No, I was wrong. Let us say my surmisal was not correct. Because now the president of Russia, Medvedev, said an attack on Iran would be the worst thing that can be imagined. You hear this? So Russia won on every front.
Obama was not playing three-dimensional chess. Apparently, he was playing checkers.
He was playing run from the conflict because he's a professor. All he did was manage the Harvard Law Review. So far as I know, the man doesn't know the real world. Kremlin says Israel promised not to strike Iran. Can you believe this? So in other words, when Netanyahu was there, the opposite occurred. Israel said they wouldn't do it. Russian President Dmitry Medvedev said Israel promised Russia it would not launch an attack on Iran. Can you believe this?
So again, Israel is left out in the lurch. They gained nothing. We've gained nothing. We've lost our appearance of strength. that we had, if we had that to begin with. We've lost allies in terms of the Czech Republic and Poland, and what have we gained out of it?
It looks like we're losing. Medvedev of Russia said he was hopeful that Moscow's relations with Washington would improve under Obama, and described the chances of an agreement on a new treaty to reduce strategic nuclear weapons by year-end is quite high. So in addition, Obama's now going to destroy our nuclear arsenal on top of it all and weaken us further. How about the three suspects arrested in the U.S. terrorism probe? Never do you see the word I mentioned, the Islam word or Muslim word. Did you know? A Colorado man, his father, and an accused accomplice have been arrested and charged with lying to federal agents about a plot to blow up targets in the U.S. No mention of Islamofascism. Just a man. Just a Chicago man. A Colorado man. Beowulf, we are being run by absolute dunces. Najibullah Zazi, a native of Afghanistan, who works as an airport shuttle bus driver. How do you like that one? One of those shuttle buses. Maybe next time you get on one, make sure you carry a gas mask to make sure that another Zazi didn't put the exhaust fumes coming back into the compartment. Hey, listen, it doesn't take an Islamofascist to make you choke on one of those airport buses. The last time I was on one, I felt like I was on an Einsatz group outing. Those buses, even if the guy was a stand-up Marine, you can get gassed to death. The CO, right? The carbon monoxide leaks right into those trucks.
It's not always just carbon monoxide either. It's a little bit of methane mixed in there too, I think.
Well, that's if you're with the AARP crowd on the bus. The AARP, the worst case scenario would be to get stuck, let's say, in Florida with an AARP crowd in one of these airport shuttle buses. The air conditioning goes, and the AARP is there to discuss the use of mayonnaise and chopped onions in salad dressing. Oh, my God. Global warming. No, we're desperate with doing scatological humor now. We're really finished. U.S.-Afghanistan commander demands extra U.S. troops to save Afghan mission. That's what I was just talking about. It's a nightmare. Obama must decide between boosting U.S. military in Afghanistan or engaging the Taliban in negotiations for a timetable for withdrawal, leaving Afghanistan and Pakistan in peril. Do you hear this? Beowulf, you play this chess game out. It's frightening.
They're playing a completely different game than Putin. Putin, he's smart, he's calculating, he's leveraging his power correctly, and we're sitting back like we're the children of the world or something. It's insane.
After dropping polls and checks, Obama places Israel in fourth place on his scale of defense priorities. Senior U.S. Army Chief General Cartwright placed Israel in fourth place on America's scale of defense priorities below our NATO allies, close quote, as part of Obama's decision to abandon the anti-Iran missile shield in Eastern Europe. Defense Minister Ehud Barak, overreaching himself to line up with the Obama line in Washington, removed Iran from the list of threats to Israel's survival. Do you believe this? So in other words, Barak now has lined himself up with the Obamaites. Look, it isn't my problem, but whose problem is it? You think the Iranian menace has gone away, Beowulf?
Not at all. Today, Ahmadinejad announced that he was proud of his Holocaust denial.
Friday, Iranian Hitler, Ahmadinejad, again termed the Holocaust a lie and declared Israel has no future. While Tehran's mouthpiece in Beirut, the leader of Hezbollah, Nasrallah, used his favorite language to call Israel, quote, a tumor which must be rooted out. And this is a country we're supposed to ignore? Ahmadinejad said every Muslim is bound to participate in this struggle as a sacred duty.
And today he said he's proud to stoke international outrage with his latest remarks denying the Holocaust as he heads for the United Nations this week.
I don't know what country I'm living in anymore, because in my day, Hitler never would have been permitted into New York City. Even in 1939, he wouldn't have been permitted. Hitler never would have come to New York because he knew they would have whacked him. Why is Ahmadinejad flying around with a total sense of protection? Explain that to me. He said he's going to get us eventually. What kind of leadership do we have, Beowulf? Is anybody watching the store? That's what's eating me up. It makes it harder and harder to get on the radio every day because I don't know which side the administration's on. Are they on the side of America or are they playing for the other team? Well, we know that the Fourth Estate, the press, isn't on the side of the people. They're owned lock, stock, and barrel by the Democrat Party. As a result, the great Obama the Great is now open to a newspaper bailout bill. Do you hear this?
Looks like somebody's trying to start a fourth estate sale.
My guess is there's going to be a radio group bailout, too. So Obama was on television all day Sunday, having his boots licked by David Gregory and company, and he took the time to attack the media, saying the media is perpetuating rude behavior. Everyone should be polite and kind to the great Obama, because that's what he's used to from his childhood. Everyone kissed his behind.
Yeah, I guess we've gone from the great society to the polite society now.
I don't know, Beowulf. It's not good news. It just isn't good news to see a president that's so egomaniacal and so narcissistic and a press that is so passive. And by the way, where are all the jobs, the 3 million jobs he was going to create? Has anyone seen one? How about Rangel, Charlie Rangel? The ethics of Charlie Rangel. You could fill an encyclopedia on that.
Sounds like an oxymoron. The ethics
well, no,
of
the
Charlie
ethics
Rangel.
Of Charlie Rangel could be a book of blank pages.
Savage.
For an update on the news making the headlines, or in some cases not making the headlines, well, here's our contact in Hollywood, James Herson.
Hi, Michael. These days, some late-night comedians reflect the American cultural and political divide. Take David Letterman, please. Mainstream media critics heap praise on Letterman because he's clearly on board with the left-wing neo-socialist agenda. For example, next week, Dave is having on Obama and Bill Clinton on two consecutive nights. And of course, Letterman is a willing attack dog for anyone remotely conservative, so he's adored by the horde of media lemmings. Jay Leno has had to buck rumors of being a Republican a few years back when he allowed his show to be used by Arnold Schwarzenegger when he launched his then-gubernatorial campaign. And this guy, Leno, wears a flag pin. You can't do that. The wine and cheese crowd loathes Leno. Mainstream critics were also frustrated over the years by Jay Leno's chin always scoring over Letterman in the ratings race. Jay's doing his primetime show now. His first show did more than four times the ratings of Letterman, so the USA Today assaulted it as a putt-rate, snooze-inducing, rehashed bore. The LA Times said after 16 minutes of the new Leno show, it was difficult not to panic. This is the future of television, the Times asked. This wasn't even a good rendition of television past. And the New York Times sniffed that it was startling to see how little difference there was between the new Leno show and the old Leno show. These poor mainstream media elitists have to put up with Leno beating Letterman. They also have to deal with comedy shows attacking them. As more Acorn hidden camera videos emerge, the mainstream media is being criticized for being MIA on the story, but some of the strongest reprisals are coming from an unusual source. Comedy Central's Daily Show host, Jon Stewart. Yeah, in a segment on his show, Stewart painfully admitted that, quote, Acorn appears to be a corrupt organization. Yeah, this is Jon Stewart, that aids and abets criminals and gets millions of dollars in taxpayer money. He described these hidden videos that have been released as an impressive expose, and he asked, who were the intrepid journalists who broke this story? Was it 60 Minutes, the AP, that guy who gets the predators? Then he showed the videos of these two 20-something independent journalists who made the videos. Stewart asked, you're telling me that two kids from the cast of High School Musical 3 can break this story with a video camera and their grandmother's chinchilla coat? He slammed the press in closing, saying, I'm a fake journalist, and I'm embarrassed these guys scooped me. Let's get to work, people. Meanwhile, an Acorn defense was launched for the hidden video in San Bernardino, California. In this one, Teresa Kelke an Acorn employee, tells someone she thinks is a pimp that she once was an escort and got away with killing her abusive husband. Now, Kelke quickly released a written statement saying she was just playing along with the undercover reporters and that she fabricated the story of killing her husband and working as a prostitute. So a couple of San Bernardino police homicide detectives interviewed her at the Acorn offices. Then they made contact with her ex-husbands, and it turned out that the rumors of their deaths were greatly exaggerated. They were still alive. However, the veracity of the story of Kalki being a member of the oldest profession was not determined either way, and probably never will be, but Acorn decided that Kalki's fabrication defense wasn't enough of a response. So the group suspended Kalki while, as their California spokesperson says, they continue to investigate and understand what took place. Acorn claims to have put in place new policies for dealing with people entering Acorn offices. And if anyone comes into one of their offices and speaks of illegal activity, they say, the Acorn employee should report that to the police and ask these people to leave. And that brings up a question, Michael. What kind of an organization has to tell employees to call the cops if someone asks them for help in committing a crime? I think we know the answer to that. Thanks, Michael. Back to you, my friend.
Thanks, James, for that report. It's Blue Monday on the Savage Nation. This is Dr. Dissident Michael Savage back in a moment. You've heard me talk about the astonishing program on the History Channel about Nazis and the occult. And joining us now is Peter Lavenda, an expert on Nazi history and author of Unholy Alliance, A History of the Nazi Involvement with the Occult, and Sinister Forces. Peter Lavenda has appeared in the TNT documentary Faces of Evil and on the History Channel special in Nazi Prophecies. Peter, can you please give us some background as to your interest in the occult and specifically its relationship to Nazism?
I'd be happy to, and thank you for having me on. Basically, my interest began with studying the interface between religion and politics. I was very interested to what degree politics and religion influence each other. And the more I studied that, the more I got drawn into a study of the role of occultism in secret societies and extreme beliefs, extreme religious beliefs, we might say, which includes occultism. And I was researching, actually, Sinister Forces years and years ago, and I wound up at the National Archives in Washington, D.C., looking at the captured German documents, and I was very kindly led there by the archivist, who said, well, you should look at the documents of the Annenerbe, the SS division that was responsible for occult research. And I didn't know this stuff existed, because there had always been so much speculation about Adolf Hitler and the Spear of Destiny and the Holy Grail and all of this, but it was all speculation. It was never documented. And then suddenly I was presented with a treasure trove of documents generated by the SS itself on all of their occult research, including expeditions to Tibet, the search for the Grail, the search for sacred objects, and the idea that the Aryan race was somehow superior, an ancient race, a spiritually evolved race. So all of these things really became very exciting, and I started to research this quite heavily.
You state that you started investigating this a while back. In fact, it was when Nixon was in power. Nixon?
That's right. My research began during the Watergate era, actually, when I began to realize that many of the same names that came up during Watergate also were coming up in different contexts. And, for instance, D. Howard Hunt, who had written three occult novels. Here was the plumber par excellence, the guy who was, you know, b- basically responsible for breaking into the Democratic National Committee headquarters at the Watergate Hotel. And here is a guy who's been writing occult novels on the side as well as spy novels. I mean, all of this became very fascinating to me. I was wondering what was really going on. And I had read an article in the Village Voice back then by a journalist called Craig Carpel, and it was called Patriotic Witchcraft. And he was tying together all sorts of disparate connections between Watergate and Nixon, Charles Manson murders, and a whole host of other things. It was a very short series of articles. I think it was two articles. But this juxtaposition of all of these political, religious, and occult ideas all in one place was very stimulating, very exciting, and, of course, very speculative, and it, based on coincidence and synchronicity and tenuous links between individuals and events. But these were things that got me thinking, and it got me really looking at how deeply our political situation and our religious situation in this country are connected, and they're connected through arcane beliefs and arcane practices.
How did Nazism grow from a political into an occult movement? And do you believe Nazism was the first place this occurred?
Well, to answer the first part, I don't think that it was an occult movement that grew out of a political one, but vice versa. I think that the occult beliefs gave rise to the political movement. The National German Workers' Party, the National Socialist German Workers' Party, the Nazi Party, had its origins at the Four Seasons Hotel in Munich, and it was being run by the same individuals who had created a group called the Thule Gesellschaft, which was a German occult research society. These are people who believed that the swastika was a sacred emblem of the Aryan race. They had gotten this from Madame Blavatsky and the Theosophical Society, these ideas. And then they developed this into an entire occult agenda that they had. It was the fall of Germany at World War I and the rise of communist and socialist governments in Germany at the end of World War I that prompted the Thule Gesellschaft to become political. They wanted to defend Munich against the communists, against the Reds, as they call them. So they fought pitched battles with the communists in the streets of Munich, and this is what gave rise to the National Socialist German Workers' Party. They were meeting in the same hotel, composed of many of the same individuals. Hitler was sent there to investigate them. He was sent there basically as a spy by the German army, and eventually came to run the place, and he became the leader of the Nazi Party. But initially, he was sent there as a spy because no one knew exactly what was going on with these guys. They were occultists, at night, and they were politicians during the day. This didn't go away. The Nazi Party didn't go away. My thesis, my point of view, is that the Nazi Party was not a political party the way we understand it. It was a cult. And cults just don't die out because they've lost a war. Cults continue to live underground for decades or even centuries. So I don't believe the Nazi Party essentially went away. It's changed face. Maybe it's changed coloration. Definitely they fled to Latin America. They fled to North America, to the Middle East, to Asia and Australia. The SS in particular, the diehard believers, the true believers in the Nazi doctrine, would not have just given up their doctrine because they lost a war. They were true believers to the very end. So I think that this is a situation we still face today.
Looking at your book, Sinister Forces, you talk again about occultism and secret societies, and I was wondering how you think these influence today's politics.
Well, I believe that the secret societies still have an influence. I mean, one of the places that really fascinates me, one of the organizations that I think deserves more looking at than we can really give it, is the infamous Skull and Bones organization. I mean, a few years ago, we had John Kerry and George Bush both running for president, and they were both had been both members of Skull and Bones. Now, Skull and Bones only initiates a handful of people every year. I mean, they're limited to 16, if my memory serves me correctly. So think of the number of Americans who are members of Skull and Bones must number only 1,000, 2,000 tops people alive, who have been members of Skull and Bones. Think of that as a percentage of the American population of 300 million people. How is it possible that two Skull and Bones members could be running for president at the same time? Astronomically, the odds are incredible. And yet, here we had it, And these guys will not talk about Skull and Bones. They still honor their oath to this society. So we have this, to me, unsettling proposition that we can have the President of the United States, a member of a secret society to which he will not answer any questions. I mean, he will not respond to reporters' questions about it. He will not discuss his background in Skull and Bones. Those are off limits. Now, that to me is very strange. So we can have a president with some very serious secrets. And this is something to me that I'm not sure that this is kosher, for want of a better word. I don't know. It's something that we should be aware of, that we should think about. We're always questioning the religious convictions of our presidents. We want to make sure they believe the way that we do in general, whatever that means. I mean, we have a lot of ideas about religion and what's right and what's wrong and what's moral and where our values are. But what about a secret society? Are we allowed to question that? And that is the thing that drives me in my research.
You say that Nazism, rather than being a political movement, is foremost an occult movement. Well, I agree with you. Do you believe, therefore, that there is a form of Nazism underlying anyone in the U.S. government, anyone in politics, anyone in the leadership?
Well, that's a leap. We have to identify Nazism for what it is and what it represents. The philosophy behind this particular cult is one of racial superiority. I mean, that's a definite central piece of what Nazism is. The cultic aspect of it believes that in the blood, in the genetics, if you will, is spiritual force, that certain races have more spiritual power than others. So that was an essential part of it. The SS was based on that, was based on proving racial purity back to the mid-18th century. So everyone who joined had to prove that they were racially pure. It went so far as if to include, for instance, a regulation that if one of the SS members had actually merely slept with a member of an inferior race, then they were polluted. It's a very sort of Old Testament approach to spirituality and race. But if they had slept with someone else who was not a member of the superior race, then they, in turn, became spiritually polluted. So the racial component of Nazism is extremely important to its followers and its believers. So the agenda is to purify the human race by eliminating members of inferior races. So from that aspect, I don't see too many of our American politicians actually believing that, although there may be a few. I mean, there may be some people who have very serious, very strong racial beliefs and who are keeping it kind of quiet. That's possible. But as far as our politicians themselves being adherents to this philosophy, probably not. But the people behind them, the people who finance them, the people who support them, that's a different story. We don't know those details. We don't know who those people are quite often. We don't know what their agendas are or their philosophies might be. And these are the things that I research that occupy a lot of my time.
You mentioned the religious side to this, and I'd like to ask you, why do you believe so many people think Nazis had a link to Christianity when there is much evidence to the contrary?
Well, as I say in Unholy Alliance, the odd thing is that Hitler, Himmler, and so many of the Nazi high command have been born Roman Catholics. I mean, they were all basically lapsed Catholics. It's very funny if you look at it from that point of view, although it's tragic. So we have Catholics, people who grew up in a ritualistic Christian atmosphere, who then defected, if you will, from the church and then got involved with paganism in a big way. The Nazi movement wanted to eliminate Christianity as much as they wanted to eliminate Judaism. To the Nazis, Christianity represented another manifestation of Jewish thinking. It was a mongrelized religion from their point of view. Among the SS, it was forbidden for you to be a Christian. You couldn't even mention words like Christmas or Easter in any kind of official SS memoranda. That was forbidden. And they replaced Christian holidays with pagan ones. So Christmas was out the window, but the winter solstice was celebrated. Baptism and christening was removed, but there were SS rituals that imitated that. So the idea of the SS was to completely replace German religious thinking with pagan religious thinking that was racially based.
Thank you for this interesting look at Nazis and the occult, author Peter Lavenda.
For those who are interested, my book on Holy Alliance is readily available on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. My book on Freemasons has just been released on Freemasonry and America and the founding of America. It's called The Secret Temple, and you can find that at any Barnes & Noble or, of course, online. My website is www.sinisterforces.info. And just in closing, Michael, I want to say thank you very much for having me on. I enjoyed it thoroughly, and I hope we can do it again sometime.
Savage.
Perhaps you've forgotten already with all of the other changes that Obama is bringing to America, altering it in a way nobody will ever recognize. But the Obama administration has recently appointed a man named Mark Lloyd as so-called diversity czar of the Federal Communications Commission. I told you how Lloyd admired the dictator Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. Well, get ready for his latest bombshell.
Although affirmative action largely benefited white women, that affirmative action was largely viewed as something that was benefiting blacks, not necessarily any of the other racial groups, but by blacks, and that blacks had gotten enough, and that it was time to do something about this, and these affirmative action programs needed to be stopped.
Did you hear that? He claims that affirmative action benefited mostly white women, not blacks. But wait, he gets wilder, much, much wilder.
We have really, truly good white people in important positions. And the fact of the matter is that there are a limited number of those positions. And unless we are conscious of the need to have more people of color, gays, other people in those positions, we will not change the problem. There are a few things, I think, more frightening in the American mind than dark-skinned black men.
This man, this racist man, in my opinion, just as Eric Holder, the Attorney General, says that America is a racist nation. That's the assumption he's using as he moves forward to try and push white conservatives out of talk radio. Meanwhile, as Obama tries to push the war in Afghanistan, he seems to be completely out of his depth. Listen to this.
There's a natural inclination to say, if I get more, then I can do more. But right now the first question is, are we doing the right thing? Are we pursuing the right strategy? And once I have that clarity from the commanders on the ground, Secretary Gates, my national security advisor, Jim Jones, and others, when we have clarity on that, then the question is, okay, how do we resource it?
You hearing what I'm hearing? It sounds as though Obama's trying to figure out what he's going to do in Afghanistan live on camera while U.S. troops are dying. He doesn't understand why we're even there. I'm not sure anyone does. Either win the war with overwhelming force or get the hell out of there now, Mr. Obama. And on the domestic front, he continues to blame his problems on George W. Bush.
As old divisions and special interests reigned, Washington has shown neither the inclination nor the ability to tackle our toughest challenges. Meanwhile, businesses were saddled with ever-rising health care costs, the economy was weakened by ever-growing dependence on foreign oil, our investment in cutting-edge research declined, our schools fell further short, growth focused on short-term gains and fueled by debt and reckless risk, which led to a cycle of precipitous booms and painful busts. And meanwhile, too many in Washington stood by and let it happen.
Booms and busts, huh? As far as I could tell, Mr. President, your economic plan is a bigger bust. It's busted the Treasury. And speaking of insanity, there's a mayor in South Carolina who has told her police department that she may no longer chase criminals. And I said by foot, no foot chases. Listen to what she had to say when a reporter confronted her about this insanity. No foot chases?
As of this date, there are to be no more foot chases.
Foot chasing, that's okay. What I said, that's what I meant, and that's what I said what I meant, and I meant what I said. They are costing us more money on insurance than most citizens here in the city of Welford.
Are you telling your officers that if they witness a crime, they witness someone commit a crime on someone else, and they're 10 yards away, that they cannot go stop that person?
Is that in there?
It says no chases whatsoever.
Well, that's what I said, no chases, didn't I?
Now, the reporter, she says, is trying to twist her words.
I told them no chase on foot, And this guy knows exactly what I mean. So you're trying to twist what I'm saying.
No, I'm not.
You said no chases.
No chases means no chases.
You got your story. Thank God. You are so sweet. You got your story on a woman in welfare. Hallelujah. I am so proud of you, Mr. Cato.
I'm just trying to decide what you're telling your officers. I don't think it's out of the question for me to ask you about it. You don't feel like this is possibly putting your citizens at further risk?
No, he's helping my citizens.
How so? If someone escapes from the police and they go hurt someone else, you're professional.
May God bless you.
Let's be reasonable.
May God bless you.
Let's be reasonable.
Well, she may not be reasonable, but maybe Obama can appoint her as the next green czar. I'm such an obsessive when it comes to food. You know that already. Everything has to be a meal and a special and a preparation. Because I'm getting fed up. I mean, over the weekend, I'll give you an example. I went to one restaurant. I go to it a lot. Not on Fisherman's Wharf. Not the place I love. I'll say it's in Marin County, okay? Just so you know. I order a minestrone soup. The broth tasted simply like hot water, okay, with like a cube in it. And none of the vegetables were cooked. What is this with not cooking a vegetable in minestrone soup? Who would have eaten this in the years gone by? Nobody. An Italian grandmother would have thrown it out off a fire escape. Let's say you were a kid and she said, all right, make a minestrone soup, and you didn't cook the vegetables, and it was just like hot water. She'd throw it out of the window that they served that in a restaurant. You know, every minute, senor this and senor that and this and the oil and the bread, but the food you can puke from. Before this hour is out, I'm going to ask you good people who support me and support my message and support my plight, and a plight it is, to go to michaelsavage.com. And I'm not asking you for a donation. I'm asking to give you something, and that is a blessing, a gift, a book that has taken a long while to write, all about the First Amendment, called Banned in Britain. It goes well beyond one man. It goes to the bigger issue of freedom of speech. It is a book for liberals, libertarians, and conservatives alike. This is The Savage Nation. With God's will in your listenership,